I'm hoping that will involve you guys learning a coding system that we're going to then apply to psychotherapy transcript app. So if you're in the right place, stay. If you're not, see ya. So I'm actually new to Emory. I just came July 1st. So I'm fairly new. New laptop, new office, new surroundings. So I come from New York and excited to be working with you guys. Maybe we can go around and you can all introduce yourselves so I can start learning the names.
Anything besides the names?
Name, year, and department, and what your future goals are.
Okay, sure. Hi, my name is Beryl. I'm a junior and I'm majoring in psychology. Ever since like my freshman year, I wanted to go into clinical psych. So the goal is a PhD program, but that is kind of difficult for clinical psych. So if like a master's is what I need to kind of go through to the PhD, that's also okay. I want to either work in like a clinical setting or research or professor. I guess that's really the only options, but like I'm interested in all of them. So I'm really excited to like be in my first lab to kind of assess like if research is what I want to do, like as my main focus for my career.
That's great. I got a master's before I went into the PhD program, so I share that. Yes.
My name is Tua. I'm a senior. I'm majoring in biology and psychology. And I'm pre-med, so I'm trying to go to medical school.
Great. Welcome.
Hello, my name is June. I'm a applied math and stats major. And I was like interested in like class and psychology and perhaps like how like what I'm learning and like data like be applied to like different research opportunities. So I came here.
Very good. We do a lot of multiple regression analyses in this area. So I'm sure you're familiar with those. Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Hi, I'm Nicole. I'm a senior. I'm a psychology major, French minor. And my goals are to go to PA school after taking a gap year first.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Charles. I'm currently a junior and I'm majoring in psychology and a minor in QSS. And this is just quantitative science. I think my goals are kind of fluid right now, because I'm currently deciding whether I should pursue a goal in counseling psychology or clinical psychology, as suggested by both clinical and counseling psychologists I encountered before. And
they each favor their own discipline, right?
Yes, and they just suggest me to participate in like some kind of lab and take some courses in both areas. Yeah, so that's actually my primary goal of like attending this lab meeting today.
Great.
My name is Janet. I use they, them pronouns. I am a psych major and I'm a sophomore. I actually have intentions of going to law school after getting my degree, but I'm actually not sure what I want to do after law school, if that means going the attorney route or going into research. I do love psychology and I knew this is what I wanted to do for like quite some time, so I was like, might as well get some lab experience while I'm here, so that way like if I go out from like the JD route and think about research, I'll have some like lab experience.
So maybe forensic law.
Maybe.
My name is Carolina and I'm a junior. I'm a psychology major and political science minor, and the goal for me is clinical psychology. I'm not sure yet if the PhD track or PsyD track is the track for me yet, but I'm just glad to be getting some clinical experience.
Great.
I'm Grace. I'm a junior as well, and I'm an MBB major.
What is that?
Neuroscience and behavioral biology. with a religion minor. So
okay.
Yeah. My goal is to go back to Brazil as when I graduate and get my master's in either like neuroscience or theology. I'm interested in like the intersection of both fields. So yeah, and I want to be a professor. So
great. Tell me your name again.
Grace Durkin.
There you are. Okay, good.
Hello, everybody. My name is Daniel. I'm a junior majoring in chemistry and psychology. My career paths are either psychiatry or clinical psych. And I am very interested in the processes of psychotherapy, and I am thinking about trying to apply such techniques in my practice in the future.
Great. Well, welcome, everybody. I'll give you one piece of advice right off the bat. If you're applying to clinical psych programs, either PsyD or PhD, you're going to need some research experience, and you're going to need some clinical experience. So this will qualify for research experience, but clinical experience, even if it's volunteering for a suicide hotline, that counts. If you're a counselor at a summer camp, that counts. You know, some kind of, preferably more clinical than summer camp, unless it's a summer camp for a specialized group like ADHD kids or kids with autism spectrum disorder, something like that, that would really count. But I would urge you to, especially if you're a junior or senior, to be thinking about how to get this experience now, especially if you're not taking a gap year and you're applying to graduate schools right out of the gate. You need to get that experience now. Both clinical and research, and that goes for PsyD as well as PhD. I taught for 23 years in a PsyD program, Long Island University in New York, and we looked for research just as much as the PhD programs. So so this is good experience for you if that's your goal. And that leads me into the next thing I want to talk about. You're recording this, right?
Right.
Right, okay. Because there are students who couldn't make it who want to hear what we did, what we talked about. This is a voluntary lab, so I will not be paying anybody any money. But what I can offer you, beyond the experience of learning how to do research with psychotherapy data, is I'd be happy, if you do a good job in the lab, of course, I'd be happy to write you a letter of recommendation for graduate school. That I can promise that as long as you do well in this experience, I'm happy to do that for you. I'm happy to meet with you and talk about your career goals and give you some informal career advice. I'm not a formal advisor in the undergraduate psychology department. The only faculty member I've had any contact with in that department is Andrew Kazama. He's the only one, and he's been very good at walking me through this process of recruiting undergrads to my lab. Rachel Swathaswai, who's a sophomore, who's observing the holiday today, she couldn't make it, but she's contacted me months ago. She's from Long Island, and so we talked, and I told her to contact me in September about a lab I'd be starting at Emory, and So we met last week, and she's the one who mentioned Andrew Kazama. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. But
yeah, you know.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Kazama?
Yeah.
And she said he could publicize your lab. And I said, great. So the next morning, Thursday morning, I reached out to him, and we eventually talked on the phone, and you know, it's all good. So I'm happy that he was able to help me with recruiting you guys, because I think this is going to be a great experience. What else do I have on my list? So what are the requirements? The requirements are that you set aside 6 hours a week for this lab. That includes the hour and 15 minutes that we meet every week on Wednesdays. So we're meeting every Wednesday, 4:45 to 6. If that's an inconvenient time, I'm sorry, but that is going to be the time, unfortunately. I've already had to turn a couple of people away who had a class at this time or had other obstacles. So I do require you to attend the meetings. If by chance there's something that comes up, some emergency or something, and you can't make it, I'm going to learn how to record on my laptop for future lab meetings. And I'll post them on my website, and then you can listen to them. But that's only in the case of an emergency. I really expect people to attend in person. I'm tired of wearing masks in class. So anyway, what else? Yeah, so the rest of the time that you won't be in the lab will be devoted to learning this coding system. And we'll have practice vignettes that I'm going to be sending out to you, and you're going to be responsible for coding them, and then coming back to the lab meeting and discussing your ratings. Okay, so we're going to have to continue learning ask different facets of the coding system, and then practicing on it, and then discussing what it was like coding that particular facet of the coding system. I'm going to talk a little bit about the coding system today, but not a whole lot. We're going to spend the entire semester, October, November, and December, doing that. It's a quite elaborate, sophisticated coding system. It's actually created by an Emory faculty member in the doctoral program, the PhD program, Drew Weston. Anybody ever heard Drew Weston? Anybody ever have him for class, or you've heard of him?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So he created this, huh?
I was just like, he got it like that because he knew him.
Oh. So he created this system of a number of years ago, but it's really starting to take off. People are starting to use it in research, especially research on psychodynamic psychotherapy transcripts. So, but it can be used for a number of different textual sources of data. For example, TAT responses. You guys know what TAT is? Thematic apperception test. So I can show you a kind of an ambiguous picture, and I tell you to tell me a story about it with a beginning, a middle, and ending, and tell me how the characters are feeling and thinking in the story. You can glean a lot of information from just a few stories. I can tell you all about your quality of object relations just from that one test. So that's one way. Another source of data that this coding system has been applying to is Rorschach data. Anybody know what the Rorschach is? Never heard of it?
The
Rorschach inkblot test. It was developed in 1911, but it's used in research and in clinical settings, and basically it's a series of 10 inkblots. And basically you tell the respondent, what might this be? You don't give them any other information, just what might this be? And then they tell you what it might be. And then you go back over their responses and query different aspects of their response. But anyway, this coding system I'm going to be teaching you can be applied to workshop data as well, and different kinds of data, interview data. I'm using it in a less familiar way, which is to code psychotherapy transcripts. So I just led my last lab at LAU was devoted to learning this system. So I've already taught it to a group of students. The students all gained reliability on the system, and we used it to code a series of child psychotherapy transcripts this past spring. This year, I want to apply this coding system to adult psychotherapy transcripts. Right? We got 50 or 60 of them, and at some point I'm going to group you into twos, and I'm going to be distributing these transcripts, and you're going to be coding them. And so if we have one, two, three, four people are here. Five groups. Let's see, you do two per week. So that's 10 per week. You know, we'd finish in like 5 or 6 weeks. So, but we're not going to start out doing two per week. It's going to be one per week, and then we're going to gradually increase it. So that's the goal for the spring. Actually, use this or apply this coding system to the actual real data that we'll be coding in the spring. So, so I wanted to mention that. I'll give you a little bit of information on the coding system, okay? It's the social cognition and object relations scale. Social cognition and object relations scale, the SCORES is the acronym for it. And the SCORES consists of 8 scales. So if I gave you a TAT response, you would read that response and you could code that response on 8 different dimensions of this coding system, SCORES. So an example of one of the dimensions is social cognition, social causality, right? So the ability to understand how people's behaviors influence each other. The understanding of how people's behaviors influence each other. Another dimension is complexity of object relations. So object relations are basically people's representations of others and themselves. And how complex they are, right? How rich and nuanced they are, you get more points for that. The rating scale. So we look at complexity, we look at the differentiation between self and other mental representations, right? And how can I differentiate myself from you? And how holistic, how integrated is a mental representation? Are people characterized or represented being all good and all bad? Or are people recognized and represented as having good and bad elements in them? Right? So those are two aspects of complexity, differentiation and integration. So we're looking for increased differentiation between self and other representations and increased integration within mental representations. So good and bad, elements of good and bad are seen or perceived or represented as being connected to a whole person. So that's another dimension. There are 8 of them. I'm not going to go into all of them today. We'll start actually formally talking about the coding system next week, but I wanted to get that out there. Any questions so far? Yes. June, right?
Yes. Yeah. Is the meeting always here?
Always here. Yeah. My office is on the other side of these offices here. Look, if you guys can agree on some place on campus to meet that can house 12, 13, 14 people, I'm happy to move. But this is the space that I know, and it's a nice, very nice space. But I do know that for some of you, it's a little bit of a hardship to come all the way out to Executive Park for these meetings. But if you're willing to look for a space on campus, the main campus, and it can accommodate everybody, a classroom or something, I'm happy to discuss that. But for now, we're gonna be here, okay?
Okay.
All right. What else is on my list? Okay, so this is a voluntary experience. I can only pay you in letters of recommendation and informal career advice, but I did talk to Andrew Kazama, and he did mention that there is the possibility of if you have work study money, and you know how that works. I'm brand new to the system, but there is, as some of you have work study, if you want this to count toward your work study, I'm not opposed to that. I'd be happy to sign whatever documentation that you need for this to count for work study. The other possibility that Andrew proposed to me, which I didn't obviously know anything about, is course credit. So there is the potential for this to be sort of like a course. And I just talked to him about this yesterday on the phone. And he said that, you know, obviously your attendance has to be really good and so forth, but you have to write a 5-page paper at the end. And he said, I wouldn't even have to read the paper.
Would that be possible for this semester or upcoming?
I mean, you could talk to Andrew about that. I'm happy to make it retroactive, but you guys started over a month ago, right? So
yeah.
Maybe not. You have to talk to him about it. I'm sort of outside the workings of the psychology department because I'm not a member of the psychology department. So this is my first contact with undergrads on this campus. So, great.
Welcome.
Yeah, thanks. So, that's something you can talk about with Andrew maybe for next semester. I don't know. I don't think it would probably count for this semester, but ask him. I don't know. I'm happy to accommodate you guys. And he did also tell me that the first 3 credits you could actually use toward your major. And then subsequent 3 credits, like if you wanted to work with me next year, or the year after that, or whatever, you know, subsequent semesters, the 3 credits would just count toward like general education credits, I guess. But the first 3 actually count towards your major. That sounds nice. Well, you're going to be doing 6, so you got that covered, right? So that's something to look into, and Andrew would be your point person on that. Okay. Yeah, so this semester, we're learning the coding system. Next semester, we're applying it to real-world data. So that's how I'm conceptualizing very broadly this year for you guys, okay? The last thing I wanted to mention is the potential, and I think I did include this in the flyer, the potential to collaborate together, all of us, on a poster presentation. Does anybody know what a poster is? Not like a cat hanging on a branch saying hang in there. Who wants to share what a poster is?
Right.
Go ahead, Nicole.
I guess it's a poster that you present that has like your research kind of summarized to present to, I mean, anyone who wants, at least like for Psych 200W, we did it. I don't know. Psych 200W is like a required course for the psychology major,
okay.
And where we have to do like a poster presentation to.
Just among the group or at some conference?
It's like open to everyone basically because it's in the psych building, but it's mostly just all the other students in 200W that go and like look at your posters and then they're graded.
Okay. This is more for the big time.
Yeah, this is for everyone.
It's for the whole enchilada. No, yeah. I'm just kidding. It's my lab. So I conducted a lab for 23 years at LIU, so this ain't my first rodeo. And every year we presented at least one poster to a conference, and it was usually the American Psychological Association conference. And I don't know, it's in August of every year. I don't know where it's going to be next year. Maybe somebody on their laptop and Google that, and then we usually have, I don't go to the APA conference, I go to a different conference, but Usually we have a representative, at least one representative from the lab, who actually goes to the conference and presents the poster. And what does it mean to present a poster? It's very, very simple, actually. Nicole is right, it's a physical poster, right? And it has a short lit review, it has a short method section, a short results section, and then a short discussion section. It may be a sentence or two for conclusions. It's very contained. It's really not much longer than a long abstract for a research paper. And all our names will be on it. My name goes last. The person who decides that they want to physically go to the conference, and they're now back live and in person. Back in 2020 and 2021, they were remote, but starting this year, they were in person again, and we had a representative of my lab go and represent our lab with this poster. But anyway, what you do is the conference organizers assign you a slot with other posters, and you actually physically take the poster with you to the location where all these other posters are, and you get an actual real estate, mm-hmm. right? So they say you are going to be on board H7. So you find H7 and that's your space. You bring thumbtacks and you tack up the poster and you stand there and smile and look presentable, and you wait for people to come around and ask you questions about the poster. And believe me, by the end of the academic year, you're going to know everything about the poster. And there will be no problems with answering questions. But it's like it's very informal. People are eating, they're walking around, it catches their attention. Tell me about this. How did you collect those data? Or like, did you consider analyzing the data this way? Or that's why we need a statistician. Or you're the chemist, you're the statistician.
Yeah.
You need a statistician to kind of explain those things. It's fun. You're usually 3 or 4 days. You don't have to go the whole time if you don't want to, but it's a nice place to network with other grad students, with professors who do go to these conferences. And the APA is a massive, it's not even called a conference, it's called a convention. Mm-hmm. It's like 30,000 people attend. I mean, they're massive affairs, but they can be a lot of fun. And I'm really surprised that the undergraduate faculty don't sponsor students to go to the American Psychological Association. No, that's crazy.
I was gonna ask if Emory would help pay for, because it's in Washington.
Was it Washington?
Yeah. So
why, the state of Washington or Washington, D.C.?
D.C.
Okay. It's a train ride.
A long train.
Amtrak. You'd have to talk to Andrew. He's the only person I know, so I'm gonna mention his name. He is. Even though I've only had one phone call. You can tell. So you can ask him whether there are opportunities for Emory to pay for you to go to conference expenses paid. I don't know what Emory has available. So it's fun. Often I have more than one student who volunteers to go. And because LIU didn't have any money, they paid their own way to go. But Emory is a much more, resource-rich university than LIU was. So maybe they would be willing to pay, but we often had multiple people from my lab go to the conference, and everybody has said it's been a lot of fun, very enjoyable experience, and they learned a lot, and they made connections with people. So something to think about. I mean, the American Psychological Association is the largest, most well-known organizational body that represents psychologists' interests, essentially. The conference I like to go to is a sponsored by an international organization called the Society for Psychotherapy Research. And I really like that, and I often present at those conferences my own research. The next one, in case anyone's interested, is in Dublin next year in June, which I'm going to. So if anybody has an interest in that, let me know. But I'm really focused on us targeting the American Psychological Association conference in Washington, D.C. for August, early August. So what I expect to have us do between now and, let's say, December, that's not giving us a lot of time, it's, what, 2 months? Is as you hear me talking about this coding system, and as you think about the adult psychotherapy transcripts, right, be thinking about how you might formulate a hypothesis about the data. What might you want to ask of these data? Okay, and you can think about this, and we can talk about it in the future coding teams or lab meetings, but be thinking about that, and then what we do is we'll choose one of those ideas or whatever, and then one person has to become like the point person on the poster. Like the person's going to organize the poster, and I usually am the one who analyzes the data, but maybe we have somebody here who would like rather analyze the data on my behalf. But that person, whoever becomes the point person on this poster, gets first authorship. And then everybody else is in alphabetical order after that first author. That's how I've always done it. It's always worked out. And then I'm last. My name is last on a poster. Not because I'm least important, but you know, just, I want you guys to have, I have recognition. You guys are the ones who need recognition. I'm good. The point person should get first authorship. They're going to be doing the most work on the poster. And then everyone else alphabetical, and then I come last. So that's how I usually work poster presentations. Now, in some years, not too often, but occasionally, two individuals have two equally good ideas, and they both really want to be first author on a poster. And I'm not opposed to fielding more than one poster at this convention next August. So if that is the case, I'm happy to run with it. But I mean, you're limiting yourself to the data that we're coding this year, right? That makes sense. Now, one other thing you should know is that this data set, the adult psychotherapy transcripts, have already been coded for a different set of variables. And I will tell you, I will get into that more next time. And that should help you to think about hypotheses that you might want to test or formulate around this data set. So once I tell you more about what's available to correlate with, that should help you brainstorm more ideas about hypotheses. I assume everybody's taken some research methods course in the psych department. Yes, no?
I have a question. Like,
yes.
The information I've learned has been like probably more basic than like your understanding. So when you say that the data has already been coded and used for like different research,
mm-hmm.
and then we have the possibility or potential to have more than one poster, what are like the limitations of using data that has already been used?
No limitations.
Okay.
Why is that? Because there's no dry erase board in here. I'll have to work on that.
They have that at some schools, you know?
Yeah. They do that in the chem
building. Oh, you write on the wall?
No, the glass.
The glass.
Oh, the glass. I don't think this glass.
Yeah.
I probably get in a lot of trouble. So let's say you have a variable from the scores coding system, right? Let's say complexity of object relations So that's a rating scale from this coding system. We have that. And then we have a variable from this other coding system that my lab at LIU used to code the same data a few years ago, right? So let's say that adherence to psychodynamic treatment principles. So now you have complexity of mental representations or object relations, and then you have adherence to psychodynamic principles. If you correlate those two, that's a hypothesis. You're hypothesizing that there's a positive correlation between the adherence to psychodynamic principles and the patient's complexity of object relations. So the more you adhere to the principles of psychodynamic therapy, which we could talk about, but unstructured, free association, making interpretations of patients' utterances, material, right? That somehow that work results in, I'm using causal language, but it's correlated with higher complexity of object relations, right? So you could argue that suggests that maybe there's a causal connection, right? So that's a hypothesis right there. So the more you know about the data or the coding system that's already been applied to the same data, the better off you'll be with formulating your own hypothesis. So it's very common to use a source of data and then apply separate coding systems to it, because then you can intercorrelate the different coding systems. You got it?
Yeah, quick question. So from my understanding, just like within this lab, our only possible limitation is just not replicating.
Exactly.
Not like confirming data or anything, or coming up with like new.
Exactly. So several years ago, when this data set was coded for what's known as the psychotherapy process QSET, we fielded a poster at the American looking at some variables with the psychotherapy process QSET. If we're looking at variables between the scores and the psychotherapy process QSET on this data set, that's new. Because my lab several years ago didn't have the benefit of those the scores data, because that's what we're going to be working on this year. So we're contributing to the repository of codes that have been applied to this data set of psychotherapy transcripts. Does that make sense? So that's your contribution to this lab and to this data set. You're adding something new that's never been done before to this data set. But because it's already been coded through a different lens, right, looking at some different questions, now you have the richness of all, you have access to all of that data in formulating a hypothesis. So just because my lab from several years ago used those data on a poster doesn't mean that you don't have access to it, because you're going to be doing something different than that. So then it becomes something new. All right? Any questions about posters, hypothesis formation, anything about that? Dan?
So are we going to be analyzing or looking at the data first before we make the hypothesis, or do you want to hypothesis formulate before we start again?
Yeah, so that's a good question. Typically, what I've done is sometime in the fall, we're learning the coding system, and my students start thinking about ideas. They know what the data are, but they've never seen it. So you're asking if you could actually see the transcripts now. Yeah, I could send out a random transcript just so you could see what it's like. Is that what you're?
That would be nice.
Yeah. So let me make a note of that. we obviously won't be coding it, but you just want to take a look at it, that's fine.
I'm kind of new to this stuff, so if I could have any like background.
Sure.
That would be great.
Would this excerpt be from like a real data that we're looking
at? Yes, I would, I'll send out a real, this would be a transcript that a pair of you is going to code. How about that? I don't know who's going to code it, but it will be a transcript that will be in the batch for coding. Is that good?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then sometime next spring, you'll see this transcript and you say, oh yeah, I remember this from the fall. All right, so what are the questions you have about anything related to the lab?
Okay. Where is the lab and where do I work?
Okay, another good question. Your lab is your bedroom or wherever you do your work.
Nice.
All right, so the only time you have to be on campus in this lab is for this meeting. That's it. Everything else will be done in your bedroom or your kitchen table or wherever you do your work. All I ask of you is that because the data are psychotherapy data, now they're all de-identified, and I checked with the IRB at Emory, and it turns out you guys don't have to take the IRB certification that I had to take this summer. But I would just urge you not to share the data with anybody. No one else can see the data. Don't make copies of the data. I mean, if you want to print out a hard copy because you like to mark it up, and you're going to find that you're going to want to make notes when you're doing the coding, be sure you destroy the hard copy after you're done with it. Shred it, throw it away. I can't monitor everybody's use of the data, but I'm just asking you on the honor code to be responsible with the data, because this was an actual real patient and an actual real therapist, and they were actually working together. And so I wouldn't want the data to fall into the wrong hands. So I'm hoping that I can trust everybody to be responsible with the psychotherapy transcripts I'm going to be emailing you. If you need to print it out, be sure you destroy your copy when you're done with that. And don't let peering eyes look over your shoulder on your laptop as you're coding or reading transcripts. Everybody got that? Yeah.
I know you said that the data has been de-identified, but does that mean we don't have to do any like city certifications for it?
I checked with the IRB, they said no.
Okay.
In fact, this particular data set does not qualify as human subject research, ironically, because it was collected so many years ago. And I don't even know the name of the patient or the therapist. So for that reason, the possibility is like so remote that you'd be reading a transcript and you say, oh, I know that person. I mean, first of all, the data were collected in New York. We're all here in Georgia. And what are the chances that you would be able to recognize the de-identified data who the person is?
Does that mean we don't need to like install people? I really computers. And then if like how would you be sending this?
I'll be sending it, I'll be putting it in the OneDrive. Okay. And that's secure.
Okay.
Yes.
So if we wanted to take notes on the transcript or something, like we shouldn't download it onto our iPad or something, right? Like, is that considered?
If you do, if you download it onto your hard drive, mm-hmm. You need to delete it when you're done
okay.
using it. Yeah. What other questions? Yes.
So how would the work hours be booked? Is it like subjectively like?
It's the honor system. I'm trusting you to keep your own hours. I know for a fact that if you're here once a week, and everybody should be, that's an hour and 15 minutes out of your 6 hours. So then you have, what, 4 hours and 45 minutes to go. And look, not every week is going to be 6 hours of work. That's sort of like a maximum. I say 6 hours just because if for some reason there's a week where you have 6 hours to do, that nobody's shocked. That's the expectation. It's 6 hours a week. Usually it's less. But I don't want anybody to feel, if I said it was 3 hours a week and then you had to work a 6 hour week, you'd be angry. I'm trying to manage expectations here. So usually it's less than six, but I say six to set that as the expectation. And yeah, and so the hour and 15 minutes you spend here in Executive Park, and the other 4 hours and 45 minutes, or wherever you do work. You know, the coding basically requires you have the source material, the coding system, and a coding sheet. That's all you need. So really all you need is your laptop in order to do this kind of work. I will also be sending out reading assignments every week. In fact, I'll be sending, now that I have everybody's email address, I'll be sending you a reading assignment for next week. It's not like 50 pages, it's not like that at all. It's not any more than 10 or 15 per week. But that counts toward the hours, okay? That counts toward the 6 hours. That's not extra. You know, the 6 hours is an all-inclusive experience.
What if you work slow? Sometimes it takes me a little longer than other people to get stuff done. Like, that's just how I work.
Okay. I'm sorry about that.
No, like, does that mean I have to, like, work a bit more?
I've never, you know, that's never, in the 23 years I've been doing lab, you know, leading labs, that's never come up as an issue.
Okay.
I mean, if it does come up as an issue, you know, you can talk to me privately about it.
I didn't want you to be like, she's fucking
off. No, I mean, especially in the early stages of learning this coding system, it's going to feel laborious at times, right? But I honestly don't think you're going to go over 6 hours. I could be wrong. It could be, and if that's the case, I'd like all of you to tell me, like, this took me 7 hours this week. You know, let me know. But this hasn't been an issue in the past for me, but if it is an issue, let me know.
Oh, so it's more like an assignment and you have to finish it rather than just working a certain amount.
Correct.
Oh, okay, then that's
so every week you have an assignment and you have to complete that assignment by the night before the lab meeting. So it'd be like by Tuesday night at 10 p.m. you have to send me your ratings. That gives me time to process them and give you feedback. What else? Daniel?
Do you have like a method of communication between all of us? Like,
yeah, I'm gonna communicate. Just, is it okay if I communicate via email with everybody?
Well, I guess like if like I have a question, maybe I'll ask.
Yeah, actually my lab always creates a group chat. So if you guys want to do that amongst yourselves, what I'm going to do is I'm going to maybe do this tonight if I have time. I'm going to take this information, if everybody's okay with it, I'm going to put it into a spreadsheet and I'm going to email it to everybody. Does that everybody feel okay sharing? If anybody doesn't, let me know. If they don't feel comfortable me sharing your phone number and other stuff with the group, just let you know. But otherwise, I'm going to put this in a spreadsheet, and then I'll send it out to everybody so that you'll have the information. Then if you want to create a group chat amongst you, you can add me if you want. If you don't feel comfortable with that, that's okay too.
Great too.
What other questions do you have? Yes.
There's a lot of work for this system, right?
What?
Like the computer and the screen.
I've never done it before.
We should figure that out.
Yes.
What's a computer?
I'll tell you why, because there's no whiteboard in here.
But one more, but I think we can maybe utilize this. I know we can't write on it, but maybe something with the
with my laptop.
What we're talking about.
You could connect it to an iPad potentially.
Yeah, exactly.
Another option would be, I don't know, maybe to do this in Zoom.
I mean, if we're allowed to touch and mess with this stuff, I think we should.
No, I'm allowed to fool around with this stuff. Nice. I haven't done it before. Yeah, Zoom has a nice white screen feature that I've used on a number of occasions, not here, but at NYU. I'll definitely need that capability as we go forward. So, yeah. But I probably will need a little bit of help.
Oh, so when you mentioned that we will work in pairs, do you mean that we would just each person would, two people will work on the same transcript and compare and contrast each one is called?
Yeah, so this is more for the spring, because we're not going to be breaking up in pairs this semester, but in the spring, once everyone's trained and certified, I'm going to look at like who's been more reliable with certain people than other people, and it's not terribly scientific, but eventually I put people in pairs. And so the transcripts, the real world transcripts, are going to be distributed to these pairs. And so let's say you're paired with Nicole. So you and Nicole will be coding the same transcript independently of each other, right? Totally independently. You're not talking to each other about your ratings. For obvious reasons, and then I'll calculate your reliability with each other.
Since we won't be using the real data this semester, what will we be using?
We'll be using some TAT interview data. There's a book that I have some assignments from that I'm going to be using. So that's what we'll be using this semester for practice. Also, I have a very large repository of psychotherapy transcripts, including psychotherapy transcripts that aren't transcripts that we're going to be using or coding. So those, I could rely on those transcripts for practice as well, and will be probably. Okay. What else?
Yes. On the transcripts, only record in a way that we can read them, or can we also hear through an audio?
No, good question. So the transcripts are only written. The audio, I don't even have the, I don't think I have the audio. But even if I did, this coding system is not designed for audio recordings to be coded, only the written transcript. So you won't be listening, it'll be only reading.
Oh, so when you said it's like written, is it like just written with pens or is it like typed?
No, it's all typed.
Because I was actually considering, because since humans can make some mistakes, I have some throat pain right now. I was wondering if humans can sometimes make mistakes, and if both people inside the same group made the same mistake, and if there are like any like semi-automatic methods, like a artificial intelligence method to kind of help us to analyze the data to increase the accuracy.
You mean for coding?
Yes.
Not transcribe.
Oh, is there?
You mean for coding
the data,
not transcribing?
Yes.
Yeah, so there's no, I don't know of anything like that. There's no AI program that I know of that can code these data. I mean, a computer science major might do that for their dissertation or something, but there's nothing like that available. That's why, I have to train humans.
So it's like the
making like patients that people, because of their condition, and like you can't really understand their speech or what they're trying to say. Yeah.
Right. Well, fortunately, the therapist who conducted these sessions. So it's a single case. All right. So it's a patient, and it's the same patient and same therapist throughout all the sessions. So it's a single case. This is called single case quantitative research. It's not multiple cases. So this particular patient, this particular therapist, spoke fairly loudly during these sessions, and the therapist knew how to record the sessions so that audio would be picked up. And then I had students actually transcribe these sessions. And so there, occasionally you're going to find like dot, 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 like it or inaudible, but that's going to be relatively rare. It happens. If you read that inaudible, it's nothing you can do about it. Just try to encode it the best you can. But all that is taken care of. But what else?
So where are these therapy sessions going to be? Or what is the population?
Okay, so. I'll give you a little bit of background about it. I don't want to get into it too much, but I'll give you a little bit of background about this therapeutic dyad that you're going to be exploring. So it's an adult female with a graduate student therapist. And I will give you a little bit of additional information. This graduate student therapist was supervised by me. Is that shocking? I don't know. I was at LAU for 23 years.
Oh,
I like
this.
Oh,
you were like Louisiana.
Long Island University. It's just east of Manhattan.
So you know this patient?
I never met the patient. I was a supervisor. Supervisors don't meet patients. We meet the therapist.
Oh, so it's different than like a director?
Huh?
It's different than like a director?
What's a director?
This is too specific, it doesn't matter.
Okay. A supervisor is someone who meets with a student therapist on a weekly basis to talk about their case and to give them suggestions, advice, and supervision on how to work with their patient. That's the definition of supervision. So I was the supervisor of the therapist whom you'll be coding this year. All right. And I won't provide you with the diagnosis of the patient, but I will say that what makes this data set unique is that at the same time that this adult female was being seen in once a week therapy, her son was also being seen in the same clinic by a different therapist. And that makes this data set unique because I have the transcripts of the child sessions. And those child sessions have been coded. Or scores. That's what we worked on last year. And I can actually send out the poster. And I can give you the diagnosis of that child. That's not true. I'll send out the poster anyway, just so you can see what we were last year, but it was a different case. But so this adult female had a son being seen simultaneously at our clinic, treated by a different therapist, and at Child's psychotherapy sessions were also transcribed, and they were coded for the psychotherapy process QSET, which I'll talk a little bit more about tomorrow, next week. And those data are also available to you in your hypothesis formulation. We'll actually, next week, if we can get this set up, I can actually show you what sources of data are available for you to correlate with what you're going to be coding, which is the scores for this adult female.
What was the diagnosis for this son? Sorry.
For her son?
Yeah.
Autism spectrum disorder, high function.
So the data we'll be working with is basically a bunch of sessions from just education.
Yes. It's called single-phase quantitative study. And for those mathematicians in the audience, the subjects, in quotes, are the number of sessions. So the N for a single-phase study is the number of sessions. So in this case, it's 50-something. I don't know the exact number, 50-something sessions.
Right. Could this
system?
System, yeah. Could it be used to help diagnose disorders more accurately?
It's not a diagnostic system. It's a system that's based on a very particular theoretical framework called psychodynamic theory, and it assesses the quality and complexity of the object relations. We're going to talk about it next week, and I'm actually going to send out a reading for you all to do for next week to the compilation.
So could it really contribute to any kind of diagnosis, even if it's not diagnosing itself?
I mean, you could argue that anyone who has a clinical diagnosis is going to have some kind of deficiencies in their quality of object relations. That's a hypothesis you could entertain. But the problem is that this woman in therapy has a diagnosis. That diagnosis is not going to change, right? It's going to stay the same throughout the treatment. So it's not a variable that you can test, because a variable means that it varies. The diagnosis is a constant in this type of study. Any other questions? All right, I hope to see you all next week. If you decide after having met me and listening to me that you don't want to participate, please let me know that. Email me privately, and unless you want to embarrass me publicly, let me know in private that, through email, that you're not interested in. Okay? Thanks so much. I hope to see you all next week.